Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today, and welcome to TI Fluid Systems result presentation for the half year 2023. I am Hans Dieltjes, CEO and President of TI Fluid Systems, and I'm joined today by our CFO, Alexander De Bock. So if we skip the disclaimer and take it as read and turn to slide 3 for the agenda. So this morning, I will walk you through the key highlights of the year and then hand over to Alexander, who will take you through the group's financial performance. Following that, I will talk about business development, whereafter we will provide an opportunity for your questions and obviously answers. So turning to slide 4, you will see highlights of our financial new business awards and strategic performance. In H1, revenue grew by a robust 15.1% on a constant currency basis to 1.8 billion euros compared to a market volume increase of 11.2%, so an outperformance of 390 basis points. Important to note that this growth was seen in each region. Our adjusted EBIT margin continues to improve and has increased by 210 basis points to 7.5%. This strong increase resulted from our focus on inflationary cost recovery agreements, as well as 19 million euros of efficiency improvements, which have contributed to the margin process. In the first half of 2023, we have concluded the significant majority of these inflationary recovery agreements, covering, for the most part, the full year impacts. While the inflationary environment still persists, the cost recovery agreements will help to ensure our pricing better reflects the increased production costs going forward. We expect to continue this momentum into the second half of the year. We also have continued our strong performance on new business wins with 1.4 billion euros of revenue on a lifetime basis booked in H1, of which 0.7 billion euros or about 48% relates to BEV platforms. This includes 0.3 billion euro, or about 45% of BEV awards in China, where we expect to grow our market share in H2. If we look at the progress on our strategy implementation, we are progressing well with our technology development efforts for electrified vehicles. Especially in the field of modular technologies, we continue to take good steps forward with a new award in H1. Further, we opened 2 e-mobility innovation centers in Japan and South Korea during the year. The e-mix centers have proved to be popular with our customers as they form the ideal space to collaborate and to develop thermal products, systems, and modules tailored to our customers' needs. So we are on track to set up 2 further e-mix centers in the USA and China over the coming months. These are strategically located at key customer locations. Now I'm happy to share news of our new capital allocation policy, which seeks to maximize shareholder value through both investment-driven earnings growth and attractive shareholder returns. This strategy is supported by the group's strong liquidity position and our history and confidence in robust free cash flow generation. It includes a move to a new progressive dividend policy, debt repayment, and a share buyback program. The group will also retain sufficient liquidity to allow inorganic expansion. Alexander will take you through more of the details later. So now turning to slide 5, I will provide some more detail on our regional revenue performance. First, in North America, our revenue increased by 16.1% in constant currency to 0.5 billion euros, given a strong increase above market. This growth has been driven by cost recoveries and new product launches in our thermal business, in addition to volume ramp-ups on prior launches. In Europe, revenue grew significantly by 18% on a constant currency basis, resulting in an excellent position to market. The large increase reflects the market growth, new product launches, and the success we have in recovering inflationary costs. In Asia Pacific, our revenue increased by 10.1% on a constant currency basis. The mix within the region showed good performance in Japan and India, and in China, where BEV production continues to grow rapidly, particular with BYD and Tesla, the group performed according our plan. In China, the group remains focused on delivering its plans for new product launches and increasing its presence amongst the local OEMs to drive growth in this region. So with that, I will now invite Alexander to take you through the detail of our financial performance.
Thank you, Hans, and good morning, everyone. Turning to slide 7 and reviewing the revenue bridge versus last year. We saw a strong revenue growth of 13.4% on a reported basis, and stripping out the foreign exchange impacts, our revenue grew 15.1%. As Hans indicated, the growth was distributed across all regions, and all regions benefited from a healthy market evolution, product launches, and inflationary recoveries. These pricing and inflationary cost recovery agreements have contributed to the revenue growth with a net positive impact of around €71 million year over year. Turning now to slide 8 and looking at the expansion of our adjusted EBIT year over year. Our adjusted EBIT is up 58% year over year and 210 basis points as a percentage of sales. Our teams across all parts of the business managed to close recovery agreements towards the end of the quarter with a significant majority of our customers. Notwithstanding the ongoing inflationary environment in the year to date, these agreements have resulted in a net benefit of €38 million to our margin recovery and contributed to a partial recovery of the inflationary impact that were incurred over the last 2 years. In addition, various efficiency improvements are in place. Those plans, in combination with our recent restructuring programs and a stabilizing production environment, contributed €19 million or around 100 basis points to our margin improvements. Investment in technology and the normalization of some other costs slightly offset these increases. This margin expansion of 210 basis points provides increased confidence to reconfirm our journey to double-digit profit margins in the midterm as we committed in March this year. On slide 9, you will see the relative performance of the two segments. As expected, the FCS business has shown strong revenue growth of 17.2% and even 19.1% at constant FX, outperforming the market by 790 basis points. This is the result of a healthy market as well as launches in our thermal business, particularly on BEV platforms, and strong progress on hybrid platforms across the broader portfolio. The improved margins reflect inflationary recoveries, efficiency improvements, and increased production stability, partially offset by launch costs and lower volumes at SOP. The FTDS business posted a strong growth of 10.1% on a constant currency basis and outperformed their addressable market of ICE and hybrid vehicles by around 300 basis points. This was the result of recent launches and the outcome of inflation recovery negotiations. The reduced need for investment in this business, inflation recoveries, and efficiency gains resulted in a margin expansion of 290 basis points. On slide 10, you can see that the EBIT growth of €48 million converted to a healthy increase of €34 million of adjusted net income, with the increased interest rate environment being offset by an improved tax rate compared to last year. As a reminder, approximately half of our borrowings are at a fixed rate of 3.75%, while the other half is at a variable rate. Our tax rate, excluding adjusting items, is at 34.7% for the period, compared to 46.7% last year. I would like to note here that during the year, we have updated our definition of adjusted net income. This metric was not excluding the impact of purchase accounting in the past, and we're now excluding purchase price accounting in the definition. We believe this increases the consistency across all our management measures and provides an improved transparency into the performance of the business. For comparison reasons, we reflected this change also in the 2022 figures shown on the slides, and I'm sure that you will appreciate that full comparison under both definitions is shown for historic periods in the backup on slide 27. Our adjusted basic EPS is €0.121, and I will provide further insight into the updated capital allocation policy in a minute, but as a result of this change, the board has approved a 2023 interim dividend of €0.023 per share. Turning to slide 11 now, The adjusted EBITDA is up 39 million euro year-on-year, and over the full year, we expect this to translate into free cash flow at a historic rate of 30%. In H1, though, we do have a seasonal buildup of the working capital, which is further amplified by the significant growth of our business. In addition, many recovery agreements with our customers were only formalized towards the end of Q2, which will turn into cash in the following quarter. The CapEx needs in our business are relatively modest and stable despite the transformation our business is going through. On slide 12, I'd like to set out our updated capital allocation strategy. As you are aware, the group retains significant liquidity with cash on hand of 442 million euro. In combination with the increased confidence in growing cash generation from the recovery of our markets, as well as the ability to expand margins, we felt it an appropriate time to revise and optimize our strategy towards a more balanced approach. First of all, we expect our needs for CapEx investments to remain in the range of 4% to 5% of sales, even after taking account of the current transformation. We continue to see inorganic growth as a key driver to further complement our thermal management capabilities, but as well to increase market share in our core products and drive vertical integration on those products. In order to increase the predictability of shareholder returns, our dividend policy will change to a progressive dividend with the intention to return 35 million euro for 2023, further followed by increases in line with our business growth. This will bring our dividend returns back to similar levels as the pre-COVID returns in 2018-2019. Next, given the strong liquidity position and in the context of rising interest rates, we plan to deleverage with 100 million euro term loan repayment in the second half of 2023. And finally, subject to regulatory and shareholder approval, we will launch a share buyback program later this year of up to 40 million euro, benefiting from the high returns on today's share price. With these changes, we retain a strong liquidity position with our remaining cash balance and the available revolving credit facility. It is important to note that we want to protect the financial resilience of the group, and we expect to achieve a net leverage of 1.5 times adjusted EBITDA soon, and that we can operate sustainably at a net leverage level of around 1.5 times in the future. We could imagine short-term increases to accommodate attractive inorganic opportunities, but would intend to bring leverage back to the 1.5 to 2 times range shortly after. I believe this revised approach to our capital allocation policy is balanced and confirms our focus on shareholder value creation whilst protecting the risk profile of the company. Turning over to slide 13, we can see the capital structure and the liquidity of the group. We have a cash balance of 442 million euro and a net debt position of 668 million euro at the end of June. This is slightly up versus the beginning of the year due to the seasonal buildup of working capital and impacted by FX movements in the period. Our term loans mature in 2026 and the notes in 2029. It is important to emphasize that our leverage has reduced over the last 12 months following the growth in our adjusted EBITDA. On slide 14, you can see our raised guidance for 2023, which reflects the increased view on the full year production volumes, as well as increased profitability on the back of a strong performance in the first half of the year. Whilst we are still slightly more cautious than S&P, we foresee volumes increasing to around 85 million units for the full year, compared to our previous assumption of 83 million units. And this results in an expectation of 85 million vehicles produced, with H2 slightly down from the 43.3 million vehicles in H1. We continue to expect a full-year revenue outperformance, benefiting from the significant amount of launches in the second half of 2023, particularly in China. Of course, the size and timing of those could be impacted by customer timing, but will further strengthen our position in the country for the future. Now, we now expect our adjusted EBIT margin to be above 7%. As mentioned, market volumes in H2 are expected to be slightly below H1, and we can anticipate increased labor cost inflation in the second half of the year, in particular in the US. As we have in the past, we do expect the adjusted free cash flow will convert to around 30% of adjusted EBITDA. And with that, I would like to hand back to Hans, who will talk us through the business development.
Well, thank you, Alexander. In the next few slides, I want to illustrate how our strategy is driving business development. So please move to slide 16. As you have seen from Alexander's overview, business performance has improved significantly over the last year, and the business fundamentals continue to be robust. As I communicated back in March, the opportunities continue to grow in the electric vehicle space, which is demonstrated by our strong BEV awards. On the graph, you can clearly see the strong and steady year-over-year growth in electrified program awards, exceeding the traditional ICE platforms for 2 years running now. Of particular interest are the awards for BEV in China, which represents about 45% of the BEV awards totally. This is up from 35% last year, showing our representation in China will be increasing also with the Chinese OEMs. So turning to slide 17 now, I want to expand on the discussion around China for our year-end presentation earlier this year. First, the overall market in H1 continues to grow in China with about 0.8 million vehicles. Fully delivered by the growth in battery electrical vehicle production and at the expense of ICE production. Looking at this year-over-year BEV production growth, a majority is delivered by Chinese OEMs, what is mainly BYD, with the rest by global OEMs, what is mainly Tesla in this case. In an effort to stipulate our progression in China, I previously reported the launches in 2023 and how they are split between local and global OEMs. I can update we completed 14 launches in H1 and are looking forward to another 30 launches in H2 as previously communicated. We could see some delays in timing of some launches, but overall we remain confident these launches will contribute to a return to outperformance in this important market for H2 and for the full year. So please now move to slide 18. Here you can see some great examples of the many launches we completed during H1 of this year. As you can see, it is an excellent spread of our product lines with a variety of customers, regions, and over different powertrains. It is also noteworthy to see the launches with Chinese OEMs, especially in the BEV platforms. We feel that these entry launches will provide momentum in our future growth with this expanding customer base. So moving to slide 19, provides an update on the new e-MIX, which were launched earlier this year in Japan and in South Korea. E-MIX, or e-mobility innovation centers, form a key element of our strategy, bringing simulation, visualization, prototyping, and testing all under one collaborative roof. The launches have all been well received by our local customers, what has already increased engagement and collaboration with these customers. We look forward to opening centers in China later this year and in the U.S. in the first half of 2024. So turning to slide 20, I first wish to briefly repeat our engagement for a cleaner environment that has been aligned and submitted to SBTI, or the Science Based Targets Initiative. A 50% reduction in scope 1 and 2 and a 30% in scope 3 by 2030 translated in yearly progressive reduction targets from the 2021 base. I'm very proud to report we are ahead of our reduction plan for 2023 by green energy purchases and our efficiency actions. We remain fully engaged, committed, and confident to achieve the targets in front of us. Now turning to slide 21, I would like to talk about a couple of examples of how the company is actively moving forward in becoming truly diverse and inclusive. We have an active women's empowerment network for women globally with engagement from our board members. This aims to inspire and support women to achieve success here at TI Fluid Systems. I'm also proud to share that over 750 managers and leaders across the business have been involved in inclusivity training as we continue to improve in this journey and be a workplace of choice where employees feel valued and we continue to attract and retain top talent. We also continue our efforts and targets to hire new employees at the same diversity rate of graduation in the areas we operate in. You can see the progression and success we could achieve, especially look at Germany, Poland, and the United States. So moving to slide 22, I just wanted to summarize the key takeaways. First, our revenue growth is strong and our performance remains on track. This results from taking benefit of the volume expansion, the new launches, and our recovery efforts. Secondly, profitability has increased significantly, and we are on track to achieve historic profit margins in the midterm, as indicated in our previous release. Thirdly, our Take the Turn strategy is progressing very well with growing new business awards and the product line expansions we spoke about. Our lines and thermal modularity forming a great opportunity as reflected in the significant battery electrical vehicle platform wins. Fourth, we continue to push our strategy with successful launches of e-mobility innovation centers and look forward to opening new ones. Fifth, our revised capital allocation policy seeks to maximize shareholder returns and our organic business growth, whilst leaving room for M&A opportunities. And last, given our strong performance in the year to date and the significant opportunities ahead, we are confident in raising our outlook for the full year. So with that, I would like to open the phone line now for any questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you choose to withdraw a question, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. We ask you please limit yourself to two questions per person. And our first question today goes to Akshat Kapoor of JP Morgan. Akshat, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Yes, Akshat from JP Morgan. Morning, Hans and Alex. Three quick questions from me, please. The first one on the order book. You have obviously shown continued strong business wins in battery electric vehicles and also a high share of China business. Can you just talk about the implied CPV of these business wins and if the profitability of these orders is in line or even above your medium-term margin ambition? The second question is on pricing. Could you please quantify the contribution of pricing to revenue growth in the second quarter, please? And the last one is on the medium-term outlook. You've obviously, with these first half results, shared an upbeat message on the future prospects for the business in terms of earnings and cash flow, especially with your new capital allocation policy. Can I ask you on your view of improving margins towards that double-digit target if the market stays at 85 million units over the next couple of years, please? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Akshat. I will take the first question. The order book for battery electrical vehicles, CPV and profitability. What we could see is that within the order book, as I said previously, the CPV is in line with what we saw historically on our awarding books, although there could be some variation as we obviously do not win all products that we have on all vehicles. But we do see it in an average point of view in line with what we previously communicated. From profitability point of view, also here we see historic margins generally in our business awards, also in BEV and also in China, although we have to stipulate that as the volumes ramp up and as the launch cost initially could slightly reduce that, but as the volumes recover during the production, we see similar margin in our modules going forward. maybe I'll ask Alexander to take the second.
I think your second question was regarding pricing. So pricing for the first half is impacting the top line growth by around 71 million euros. So that's the net of price concessions, recovery altogether, a net 71 million euro
for the first half of this year. And then, if I remember well, your last question was around the outlook and our progress to double-digit margin. Well, first of all, I think that was a commitment to bring back double-digit margins over the midterm. So if you look right now, we are looking at a margin of 7.5% for first half of this year. I would say that's nicely on track, and I think the components that would allow us to go back to double digit, or the ones we're pursuing to go back to double digit margin, are still the same. Nothing changes to our plan. I think we're nicely on track for our plan. But let's not forget it was a midterm plan to go to double digit margins. So I would say we're nicely progressing, and the elements that will build this path remain the same, Akshat.
Understood. Just one quick follow-up on that medium-term ambition. Is it possible for you to break up a few elements that will help that earnings profile irrespective of the volume outlook?
Well, I think the two key elements were the negotiation of price recoveries. That was the first key element we referred to back in March. I think the second key element is driving efficiency. And I think we are making good progress on that one as well. As you see in the results on the first half of the year, we are pushing on efficiency programs across the board, material, labor, fixed costs. And I think we see progress on that in the first half of the year. So the same elements remain in place as we described in March, actually.
Yeah, except I can maybe add that, as you recall, we had three key elements of building up our margin. The first one was the volume. The volume we had indicated 25% upside conversion rate on volume increase, right? And this was obviously and remains an important part of getting to the double-digit margin. Second part was the pricing recovery, and you could see in this release that we are progressing quite well on that, and within the discussion with all our OEM customers have now had the ability to include the majority or the significant majority for this year's price recovery elements. And then last, as Alexander indicated, efficiency improvements and cost savings, where we share the value here of 90 million euros of efficiency improvements and savings for the first half of the year. And we continue to improve on that number and looking forward as we go to the next periods to further build up from this efficiency improvements and allow the next period to further benefit from that.
Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question goes to George Galliers of Goldman Sachs. George, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you. The first question I had was just also on the order book, specifically the 45% of BEV awards in China. If I look at slide 18, it looks like you're pretty well spread across both European and Chinese BEVs in China. But can you give us a bit of an insight into what is the breakdown of that 45% in terms of Chinese domestic manufacturers versus Western manufacturers? The second question I had was with respect to the orders from China. Obviously, we are seeing a lot of market share fluctuation and an aggressive pricing environment. To what extent do you see a risk that some of the OEMs that have placed orders with you might end up with more or less market share than they're presently anticipating and correspondingly different volumes to the assumptions around those orders? And if the volumes were to come in light, does that risk sit with you or with the OEM? The third question I had was obviously a very strong first half. You upgrade the guidance and also increase shareholder returns. What do you see as near-term risks, if any, to the business at this point? Thank you.
Yeah, On the first question, how much of this work of the about 45% of the 300 million of lifetime awards are from domestic and from global OEMs? What I can share is that there is a good majority of this that is from local OEMs, as we have continued our efforts with them and have, as I indicated previously, concentrated on entering some of them. This includes also, in the meantime, BYD, where we also could retrieve awards from BYD that will obviously launch in the future going forward. On the price war, yes, well, there are the risk of OEMs placing orders with different volumes, I think has always been there. It's nothing new, I think, in the automotive industry that there is a risk of volume reduction or volume increases, for that matter, that we can see. We are continuously, obviously, watching our call-offs. We generally get up to 20 weeks in our systems of orders we call them call-offs. It's basically EDI orders that we see. So we continuously watch that, and we continuously evaluate where the market is going and how to react on that market. I think when it comes to the near-term risks, as we indicated, we saw a lower volume than what was projected by S&P, or we see a lower volume than what was projected by S&P for H2. We think it's about 1.5 to 1.7 million less, mainly derived from quite a strong forecast in Q4, but also very weak forecast for Q3, where the uncertainty of the domestic demand recoveries and also the export volumes in China, we think, are a risk going forward that was built in the plan. The second part of the risk that we see is the North American situation and the UAW strike situation. What is currently unclear, we have not built anything on the UAW into our plans, given the situation is very fluid and it's very difficult to predict what exactly is going to happen. But we have about 30 to 40 million euros of sales per month with the Detroit 3. So pending what the outcome is there of negotiations or potential strikes, we could see a impact for that. Then I think there is the overall weak or weaker economic momentum, what is visible in H2, that could obviously also affect our business and affect the volumes going forward.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. Please note we will take two questions per person. And our next question goes to Vanessa Jeffries of Jeffries. Vanessa, please go ahead. Your line is open. Hi, Vanessa. Your line is very quiet. Are you able to try and rejoin the queue, Vanessa, with a different device if possible? I will move on to the next question. Our next question goes to Harry Phillips of Peel Hunt. Harry, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. A couple of questions, please. The interesting comment you put around FTDS and the sort of lower asset intensity and less amount of spend going on there. And I was just wondering if there's any way you can quantify the sort of, maybe rundown's the wrong word, but the sort of reallocation of investment between the two divisions, and also the transfer of capability into sort of thermal products and so on, just how that transition is progressing. I mean, in the past, you've suggested that doesn't require substantial CapEx to sort of make that transition again. And then secondly, just on the buyback, the 40 million euros, just it's an interesting number. I was just wondering if there's the thought process behind that precise amount, if you're prepared to share that, please.
Okay. Yes, as you know, Harry, we are continuously looking at allocating old assets as human assets between the divisions in order to support the growing electrified business. That is also true for investments. As you could see in our announcements, we are seeing lower investments in our FTDS business, generally coming from the fact that we see a lot of carryover products in new cycles for the future, where the levels of investments and the majority of the levels of investments have already completed previously. We think that is continuing. If you see the success of reutilizing some of the equipment for the new product lines, especially in our thermal portfolio, we are launching the first products there, actually in Europe, and also in China, on the reutilization of this, specifically the blow molding assets, and moving forward with that progress as well. This will be a continuous effort as more of these products get an application in the future, and as obviously also the market expands on that. Why don't we see any substantial CapEx increases is A, driven by the fact that our line concepts use a significant amount of existing assets. Secondly, as I explained, we're moving some of the, you could say that roughly half of what we used to invest in FTDS now flows to our thermal investments going forward in order to assure we have base capacity investments and customer-focused investments in place for that as well. Concerning the buyback question, maybe I'll hand that over to Alexander to give you a brief.
Yeah, Harry, I think a broader perspective on the capital allocation policy. In the end, what we did across the board is making sure that we made a projection of what to expect in the years to come. And then we primarily wanted to make sure we have a good balance between making sure we invest in the business to grow the business, organic, inorganic, and then ensuring we have also a fair return to our shareholders through dividend and then this back. And that's actually how this value of the buyback amount was derived. So it's really looking at a comprehensive picture and then making sure we find the right balance between the different components.
Thank you. Moving back to Vanessa Jeffries of Jeffries. Vanessa, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Is that better?
Hi, Vanessa.
Yes, very good.
Hi. I'm really sorry if you've just been asked this while I was redialing back in. I was wondering firstly if you could please talk about the strength of the margin recovery in FTDS versus FCS and how you expect that dynamic to evolve over the next few years with those divisional margins. Secondly, on the e-mobility innovation centres, you said that there's been positive customer feedback. I was wondering if there's anything more tangible you can give us around the benefits and the investment required in each one. And thirdly, talked a bit about the inorganic opportunities. Could you maybe give any more detail on the M&A pipeline or what kind of opportunities you're looking for?
Yeah, well, maybe start with the last question on the inorganic opportunities. As I communicated historically, we are really looking for either a market share improvement or a vertical integration, especially in the modular concepts that we have into Megatronics. So that's really the two elements we're looking for, either a market share improvement, mainly on our lines, connector lines, assembly and hose business, and alternatively or in combination with an inorganic opportunity for in the Megatronics side. We do have an interesting pipeline on it. I told you, I told everybody last time, stay tuned on it. I would like to repeat that comment, stay tuned as we're progressing. And hopefully we'll be ready at some point during the year to give more clarity on that. But as I said, stay tuned on it. There is good activity ongoing in that field of our business. On the EMIC and on the benefits of the EMIC, yes, we do have some very positive customer examples. We see a lot of engagement of customers on our product lines, the modules, also the inner battery coolant lines concept that we have launched into them. This has led to at least in H1 to one additional award, as I mentioned earlier in the first part of this call, as they see opportunity to take full benefit of that. We have also established more working relationships here and collaborative working relationships with our customers, and I had a chance to meet several of them in our EMIX, especially in Asia Pacific as we were opening this. And this level of collaboration is really moving forward with a good pace, and the appreciation of the local support is quite well received. Maybe on the margin recovery?
Well, Vanessa, on the margin recovery and the margin profile between FCS and FTDS, historically these businesses have similar margins. We don't see a major change in that perspective. Now, if you look in the short term, it's clear that on FTDS we can reduce the investment a bit and shift somewhat more to FCS, which is just a natural shift, I would say. Secondly, FCS, I mean, the majority of the launches we talked about are in FCS, of course, and that comes with the costs of those launches, and in addition, some of those volumes start with low volumes at the beginning, and therefore also at lower absorption of the fixed cost in that case. So I think there's a very natural evolution for in the short term between those two segments. Now, still, I think the two other dynamics of pricing recovery as well as efficiency programs, they apply to both of the divisions. We have the same energy in both of the divisions to progress on this. I hope that gives a bit of additional color on the dynamic in those two segments, Vanessa.
Thank you. And the next question goes to Dominic Convey of Numis. Dominic, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, gents. Thanks for the questions. Just two, if I may. Can you give us a little bit more color on how the inflation equation is evolving, specifically sort of through 2023? I guess a raw material presumably coming off, energy costs coming off, labour probably a tough headwind, and as to whether you think that there could be a point at which actually costs begin to go into a deflationary environment at all. And secondly, in terms of the efficiency improvements, that 19 million realised in the first half, is there a hard target for efficiency improvements that I've not spotted, either for the full year or some sort of notional midterm target with regard to your aspiration for double-digit margins?
Well, on the efficiency improvement of 19 million euros for H1, we have an internal plan and target obviously set. But what we will see is a continuous effort in order to improve month over month our efficiency improvements, and we will come back on that as we have our Capital Markets Day on the 27th of September of this year. We will come back on that point and share some more color on how we see efficiency improvements. If you look at our material costs, when you look at resins, we see some improvements. We see some going the other way. We see some improvement on our polyethylene. We see some increases still on the polyamides that we use. So it's a mixed bag. It's still a volatile situation. And we are in discussion with our suppliers there in order to set new contracts going forward. If you look at the metals, metals are indeed, especially steel, is indeed dropped. But as contracts, as we have available contracts, this is obviously not always directly visible. Now, you have to see that we did manage with our customer base for most of the raw materials indexes in place, so the effects of that would be offset in our piece prices as we go forward. On the labor, yes, that's what we indicated. We do see, especially in the next half of the year or this half of the year, we do see that labor salaries, wages, that's going to be of an important impact. It has been also for H1, and this is obviously also something that our recovery aspects are concentrated around, including our efficiency in improvements going forward.
Thank you. And the next question goes to Gemma Permalloo of JP Morgan. Gemma, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. And I just had two follow-up questions. Maybe just going back to the inflation recovery. I think just broadly, I remember at the beginning of the year you said you were targeting about 70% of inflation recovery for this year. So given the improvements that you're targeting in the second half, I just wanted to get a sense of whether we're still tracking 70 for the year, or is there any upside to this number? And then my second question is on your M&A. It seems like you are leaving some headroom for M&A, and there's a willingness there to temporarily increase your net leverage target if you have to. Any indication on, you know, what sort of multiples are you looking at? Because it seems like you might be looking at more than just a bolt-on, and if that's maybe a fair deduction. Thank you.
On the inflationary recovery, indeed, we communicated earlier in the year about a 70% of the year-over-year recoveries. Now you have to see this in a different light, as we are currently not only recovering the inflationary increases year-over-year, meaning from 2022 to 2023, but are also looking at assuring we cover levels of recovery from the 2022 and 2021 recoveries that were under-recovered or that were not fixed in beef prices at that point in time. So if you look at it from a year-over-year base, you would see numbers now higher than 100%, given we are also, as I explained, we are also tapping into the historic inflationary increases that we saw in 2022 and 2021. Right? For the M&A headroom, maybe I can hand that.
Well, I think we're looking at different opportunities. Now, most of the opportunities are obviously bolt-on acquisitions, but of course, we always want to make sure that for the right bigger opportunity, we leave some flexibility in terms of leverage. And yes, I think you, as part of the capital allocation policy, you identify that we leave headroom for M&A very clearly. Yes, I think Hans has indicated the key drivers where we are looking for opportunities. We're actively looking for this, and we are putting, but we put also a relatively high bar in terms of margin profile and also risk level of the potential acquisition. So therefore, so far, we had not, or in recent times, TI has not done any recent acquisitions. We put the bar high, but the activity level is definitely high in this area.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. Due to the interest of time, we will take one question per person. Our next question goes to Tom Swift of Morgan Stanley. Tom, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks everyone, and good morning. I guess just following on from Gemma's question on the M&A point. I mean, you've spoken about bolt-on acquisitions before, but what kind of ballpark size are we talking about in terms of the M&A that you're looking out for? Thank you.
Well, again, I think the opportunities are a bit wider than purely bolt-ons, but I think the highest number of opportunities we look at are bolt-on acquisitions. If you would ask me to put a size on this, I would say everything between 0 and 40 million, I would consider bolt-on acquisitions. So I would say most of them are in really in that range of 20 to 40 million that we would consider as an as relatively easy bolt-on acquisitions for TI in terms of size.
Thank you.
Now,
the
one
next
thing
question.
I want to make sure. One element I just want to make sure that we make clear as well is that while we're looking at acquisitions, we also are looking at the financial strength of the company. And so we don't want to change the risk profile of the company. We're actively pursuing opportunities on M&A, but definitely don't want to jeopardize the risk profile or change the risk profile of the company, TI.
Thank you. And the next question goes to Toby Hunston of HPS. Toby, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thanks very much for taking my question. It's a little bit of a repeat given there have been a few questions on the M&A, but maybe just to confirm from the leverage perspective, if it was sort of a larger deal, what's the kind of sort of peak leverage that you'd be willing to go up to? Would that be sort of 2.5 times sort of ballpark? Thanks.
Well, it's hard to put really and to really talk about the maximum leverage, but I think just to be very clear, what we today, the leverage is at 1.8 times adjusted EBITDA. We feel very comfortable within that range of 1.5 to 2 times adjusted EBITDA. We expect to move in the direction of the 1.5 times soon. If we would do an acquisition that would bring this leverage temporarily up, our intention would be very clearly to bring this down very quickly within that range that we feel comfortable with that we just mentioned. So,
thank you. And the final question goes to Jim Williamson of CreditSights. Jim, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey guys, thanks for taking the question. So the cash balance is currently just over 400 million. I was just wondering what you would consider to be more of a normalized level of cash. And I guess, looking at that, the buyback, is that kind of a one-off to bring that cash balance down? Or is that likely to be a kind of ongoing part of the capital allocation strategy?
Well, if you look at the overall capital allocation policy, I think our top priority is making sure we drive the growth of the company through organic and inorganic opportunities. Second, we want to make sure we have a fair return to our shareholders and a reliable return to our shareholders through our progressive dividend policy. And then it depends a little bit on what the level of opportunities that were identified, the inorganic opportunities. And then I think we need to reassess on a regular basis how we best deploy the remaining funds. We can consider all the opportunities we are considering and communicating about today. But I think it's really dependent on the level of opportunities or the size of the opportunities that pop up inorganically. Cash balance is just over 400 million. What's the normal level? It's hard to really define what is a normal level of cash. I think today's cash level is a cash level that is very comfortable for the company, provides a lot of liquidity. To make sure we drive the business, that we can grow the business. Do we need this level on a daily basis? Obviously, no. But I think it's important to have sufficient cash available to support all the opportunities that pop up for the company.
Yeah, I think there's one more point is that we do have revolver facilities as well, yeah. And we have access to revolver facilities. So a normal level of cash balance for us would be would be considerably lower than the 400 million euros here.
Thank you. We have no further questions. I'll now hand back to Hans for any closing comments.
So thank you very much. If there are no further questions, in closing, I would like to thank everyone on the call for joining us today. And we look forward to meeting some of you over the next few days and again in October for our Q3 trading update. So thank you. And with that, please, operator, disconnect the call.